Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to MRSN, the Michigan Regional Sports Network.
It's time to enter the locker room, the coach's show of Michigan Admirals Minor League Football.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, good evening. I'm Donald Matthews, head coach of the Michigan Admirals, and you're listening to The Locker Room on Blog Talk Radio in the Michigan Regional Sports Network. Joined by my partners in crime, as usual. I'm still trying to get my microphone to sit right. It wanted to, like, go in my mouth or something. Lon Turner and Bill Schnornberg. What's up, guys?
What's happening?
Sir.
Ain't nothing going on but the rent. Ain't that what they say?
Yeah, no doubt about that.
Hey, now, I want to get right into it, all right? I'm sure Bill did, but Lon, were you able to stay up to watch the end of the Monday night game?
Oh, yeah. Better game than
first of all, for you people that have been that you know really aren't versed, we're gonna have a kind of quick synopsis of the last few seconds of that game, and then we're going to discuss it. This was between the 49ers, you know, the 49ers and the Cardinals on Monday night. Oh boy, you know. That had all the potential to be a snooze fest in the first place, but here we go with that clip. Or maybe not.
Sean Hill steps up and throws. It's caught by Jason Hill. Makes a man miss at the two, down to the one. March's time to spike it with his first thought.
There's still a lot
of time. Now he's reconsidering, that's right. They're going to send in their goal line personnel here.
Spike the football.
And take the three plays.
That's right. Spike the football, calm things down.
And look at the calm of Sean Hill. I know time's running. He's getting everybody set up in the right spot. It's a long time to spike it, though.
20 seconds left.
They run four, left side, dashes it, throws to the end zone. He was knocked down by a defender.
After reviewing the play, the runner was down by contact at the 2.5-yard line. The clock will be reset to 4 seconds, and it will start on my signal.
So this will be the last play of the game, barring a defensive foul.
Well, he could spike it here, too.
Yep, good. You're right, he could. And they run it with Robinson, who stopped in the game ends, with San Francisco losing by 5.
The thing that I was trying to do most of all was to get all of the information, which was very difficult to do, and try and get that information to Coach March so that we can make the best decision possible. Mike March made a call. He would have changed that call had he known that that ball was going to be moved.
Let's discuss first. You know, and there are varying things about what happened at the end of the Monday night game that we're going to discuss right now. But the first thing I want to discuss was what was, in my opinion, the most horrible clock management I've ever seen a professional football team have.
And what do you chalk that up to? Do you chalk it up to Sean Hill's just, you know, lack of experience, the coaching? Who gets the blame for that?
You're asking me or Bill?
Anybody.
I blame the coaching staff, quite frankly. It looked like they weren't prepared for the situation, and as Bill can tell you, watching me over the years, I know a couple things about the 2-minute offense and clock management, and that was just a horrible job of clock management. They actually, with 4 seconds to go, could have spiked the ball and took their time, gathered their thoughts, and had one more play on fourth down. And they didn't choose to do that, you know. Bill, what do you guys say?
Well, when they went out there, they should have had a plan in place. And it seemed like Mike Martz, when they got down there, why would you try to run your goal line out there? Why wouldn't you say the pass complete? Hill should look over the sideline. His headset's on. Mike Martz should have been there. Go spike the ball. That would have taken to get everyone down there. They had everyone set with about 33 seconds left. He could have spiked the ball. It would have been second down. Then you can run the goal line out there. After that, the biggest mistake they made is Martz ran the goal line out there, and Hill took 16 seconds to try to get a man to move up to the line of scrimmage so there was the penalty. That was the problem. Is Martz looked like he had a total brain fart and panicked and didn't know what he was doing. Like it was the first time he's ever seen a clock running and not knowing. And you have to put part of the blame, or most of the blame, on Martz because it's his offense and they're letting him do the offense with Singletary in charge. But Singletary's got to be yelling in his ear, spike the ball. What are you doing? Why are you running people out there?
Everything before that was brilliant. That was part of the problem I had. I am not a believer when you're in a hurry up situation like that, when you're up against them, the clock. I'm not a believer in switching your personnel in the middle of the drive when you don't have a lot of time left. And I thought that was the first mistake, was them even switching to a goal line situation, because no matter whether you was at the 20 or at the 1.5 or inside the 1, you were still, in my mind, in a passing situation.
Well, two, if you run down there and still are spread out with the way you were, you had them, meaning the Cardinals, in panic mode. They were already on their heels after two big plays. You had them in panic mode. You could go down there and spike the ball, or you could have went down there and set up and ran a quarterback draw, and I think it could have scored. Because they were totally on their heels.
You know, I've heard people saying that, you know, the crowd noise that Sean Hill couldn't hear in his helmet or whatever. But, I mean, at a certain point, a quarterback you would think would look over to the sideline and see at least one coach signaling spike the ball.
Well, if they ever showed again, look at Hill. He's looking at the sideline. As he's looking at the sideline, they're saying spike the ball, but you got four players running on and off the field.
Yeah.
So, of course, at least he had the presence of mind to know that he's got to make sure the guys on the line of scrimmage or there's a 10-second runoff. It just bothered me that he took 16 seconds. He should have walked up the guy, pushed him forward, and went over and spiked the ball. He was trying to explain
If I was the quarterback, it would not, in my mind, as a coach, have been a bad thing for him to go ahead and spike the ball and take that 5-yard penalty.
But it's a 10-second runoff, though.
I mean, but still you would have had more than 4 seconds. Because, before that play was run, you were a good 30, 35 seconds.
Well, even if
you had took that penalty and the 10-second runoff, you still had 20 seconds to go, and you would have still had more than that one play to win the football game.
But I think the mess up was the play before that, where they were able to get back in the huddle, and he should have said to them, okay, look, we're going to get this play. No matter what happens, you're going to spike the ball, because even if you get 12 yards, you're going to spike it. That's the mess up. He panicked and said, oh, we got to run the goal line out there, when he didn't have to do it. And I think that's what threw Hill in a panic, because he's looking and sees people running off the field and then on the field, where he should have just taken control and just yelled at everyone, get off the field, we're going to go spike the ball, and been a more leadership role. Look, this is what we're going to do.
I think there's a lot of blame to go around on this. It's, you blame Mike Marks. You blame Mike Singletary for not taking control of the situation, being the head coach. You blame Sean Hill for, not thinking things all the way through out there as a quarterback. And you blame the officials for, as the 49ers say, not communicating things well enough to them. Like I said, there's a lot of blame to go around. But to continue on another vein on this whole thing, initially when Singletary was asked about that, he basically threw Mike Marks over the cliff.
Well, if you go partly, yeah, I would say yes, he did. But partly you have to go back is the reason why they made Singletary coach and not Mike Marks was basically they told him Marks is going to run the offense. You're going to oversee everything else and be the interim head coach, but let Mike Marks do the offense because they're starting to come together offensively. We don't want to take him away from that. You'll oversee that. Now, as a head coach, I'm sure he has input on that, but Marks, it was in total control of that. So I would see partly, yes, he did throw him under the bus, but two, if they're telling you Marks is running the offense, you look over everything else and be kind of like the CEO, then
well,
I can
look,
see why.
No, I understand that, we have talked about this, on earlier shows about the reasons why they named Singletary and not Marks as the head coach. But the thing is, Singletary is the head coach, and he, whether you go for it on fourth down, whether you kick a field goal, whether you spike a ball or any of those things, those are the head coach's decisions. The head coach has veto power over the offensive coordinator in instances like that. And there was one instance earlier in the ball game where Marks wanted to go for it on fourth down, and Singletary vetoed him, and they kicked a field goal.
I honestly blame the officials for making that the longest final 5 minutes of a football game ever.
And I don't know about you guys, but I think that rule of when Gore got hit, that guy was falling backwards and put his hand on his back, and Gore slipped on the turf. And that rule saying down by contact when he's still on his feet, I thought the spot was terrible for one. And two, for him to say he's down by contact when he's running and the guy just touched his back, that's touch football. I thought that was a terrible call.
I mean, I don't know whether you could change the rule there. What do you do in a situation like that?
Well,
by the spirit of the rule, it was the correct call.
If he's down by contact, though, he wasn't at the 3.5. He was at the 2. And still, no matter whatever happened, I thought that play call was the worst play call I've ever seen.
Right, and that leads me to my third point. It was something that I said earlier in this conversation. No matter whether you're at the 3, you're at the 2.5, or you're inside the 1 yard line, I think you are in a passing situation. You got to throw the football, and for him, if you take Mike Marks at his word and say, look, I wasn't communicated to by the referees. I thought the ball was at the 1 yard line. A fullback dive from the 1 yard line against National Football League defense that is stacked up in the middle of the line is the most insanely stupid call I have ever heard in my life.
I like the play call before that though. I like that call because that was a touchdown.
That call was fine, but I mean.
But the last call was just, what are you doing?
Yeah, that's a bad call, period. Even if it's not goal line on a short yardage, that's a terrible call. Because if it's third and one, third and two, they're going to stack the middle.
Hang on, guys. Got another caller in here. Hey, how you doing?
Good, how you doing?
Good, what's your name?
This is Chris. I'm the kicker for the Belleville Giants. punter at Northwood.
Oh, hey, how you doing? It's been a while since we talked to you.
Yes, sir. How are you guys?
You wanted to join in the conversation here?
Something like that, yeah. Okay. Yeah, play calling was awful, I'll agree. I didn't watch it too much, yeah.
In your opinion, whose fault is it?
I'm sorry?
In your opinion, whose fault is it?
That's got to be, it's partially on Sean Hill because you got to have, like the savvy in the game to, 4 seconds left to make the play, to either to spike the ball or something. I don't know. It's kind of hard to play blame in that situation on one particular, coach, player. It's a tough situation. It's tough for Mike Martz and Singletary to lose a game like that, absolutely.
I think the big thing is that you'll never know what final is. The official walked up to Sean Hill, and I'm sure he told Sean Hill what down it was and said, look, you look at me because I'm starting the clock as soon as the ball's set. And he ran all the way back there. And if Sean Hill wasn't sure of the call, he should have spiked the ball and said, okay, it's fourth down. And had the sense to say, and they'd be like, well, what are you doing, coach? They said it was third down. They were stacking the line. I didn't want to take a chance.
Right. Well, that play, that little stupid dive play turned out to be the final play of the ball game anyway. It's just, I'm just a lowly little semi-pro football coach. What do I know? But you got to, if there's any confusion there about where the ball is going to be spotted, about the play call, about the personnel you got, if it is not fourth down, you spike the ball and put it all on fourth down.
Now I got a question. Now, do you think that Sean Hill didn't do that out of fear of what Mike Singletary, how he would react to it, for him not following, not doing what the coach wants you to do?
I don't think it's the truth of the matter is, I think, out of all the people that we talked about, the culpability in this, and Mike Martz or Mike Singletary or the officials or Sean Hill, I think Sean Hill probably has the least culpability in all this.
Well, too, as a college football player, I know one time this year I actually audibled out of a fake punt we had set up because they stacked the middle. They brought they had guys hanging back, and they had the fake on, and instead I was supposed to just do a shovel pass to the personal protector, and I punted it away, and I just told my coach, I tried to use my football intelligence, and I just didn't play.
You have to trust, if you're going to put situations like you were in, Chris, where you had the opportunity to audible out of a play, you have to trust the players out on the field to see the situation and to make the adjustments. If you don't make the adjustments, to at least call a timeout and say, hey, we better think about this.
I absolutely agree, because it was kind of, it was, I think it was Wayne State we were playing, and we came out, we were going to run a fake first punt, and they came out, and they shifted the whole line and dropped somebody back, and it was just, he even told me in practice, hey, we can still punt out of this, because everybody's still blocking and doing, their assignment. We had one guy pulling around through the A-gap for a lead block or a wing, and, I did it. So in that sense, I would, if Sean Hill couldn't get the call, or if he didn't like the call, I blame him for that, absolutely. Because if you're an NFL starting quarterback, you gotta be able to function in that situation.
I just, like I said, in the same vein, I didn't like how Singletary threw Marks under the bus initially, before kind of backing off on that, earlier today and putting more responsibility on himself.
Okay, that's probably the right thing to do. He's a fiery guy, though, too, that kind of has to go with his personality. I can see him throwing, another coach under the bus, in a sense.
You just, as a head coach, you may disagree with somebody privately, disagree with one of your other coaches privately, but you just don't do that publicly.
I completely agree with you, 100%.
Bill, talk to me.
Yes. I just think at some point, even when you're a quarterback, you have to, and even if it's your third start or 30th start, you have to take charge of and know game management. He has to know that referee, if he's not smart enough to ask the referee when he walks up to him, what down is it? because after all the review and whatever, they threw the flag. They said, there's no flag. We're going to respot the ball. It's third down. You have to know time. You have to know what down it is and the whole and the situation. And he, everyone on that team had a brain freeze and a brain fart like they have never ran a two-minute hurry-up offense with no timeouts before.
Yeah, but they haven't really been close in a game all year, though.
But you know what? You run that stuff in the off season, the preseason, during the season, and for him not to know that spike the ball, there is no coach that is going to yell, "What did you do that for, coach? It was third down. I wanted to make sure we had the right play call." Okay. They're not going to get up. There's no coach on this that coaches anywhere. Well, maybe one spot that we won't mention will get upset with someone spiking the ball third down to make sure they had the right call.
And if you know if he's upset, there's fourth down. So if you put it in the end zone, I'm pretty sure he's not going to complain anyway.
It's the last play of the game anyways, regardless if it's third down or fourth down. It would have been 3 seconds left. You got to know situation score. And for the most part, March has been in that situation way more than Singletary, and he had the bigger brain fart than Singletary because he totally blew it, and he's the one with the communication to Sean Hill. He's the one with the communication that said, look, do this. That's on him. Singletary doesn't have the communication. Martz does.
But don't you think, though, and this is speaking, you know, with how we do things with the Admirals, and I'm sure a lot of teams at this level do it the same way. When you're in a two-minute offense, I mean, you really, as a coach, you're taking yourself out of the equation for the most part. You're turning everything over to the quarterback. But there's certain things that you definitely have control over, when to call timeouts, when to spike the ball, when to get them in a huddle and actually send out a play to the quarterback and everything. Does that – what happened Monday night show Singletary's inexperience?
No. I did not put this totally on him because March has communication with Hill to his helmet and can say to him, what's going on? What down is it? Where are they marking the ball? And he did not do none of that with communication to helmet. He did zero of that because you could tell because Hill had no idea going to the line what he was doing except to run the play.
I think that goes back, too, to Sean Hill's awareness in that situation. I think that's, like the more I've sat and thought about it, like that's a big deal. I think Sean Hill really did drop the ball on this. As an NFL quarterback, like I said, you really have to be aware of what's going on. You know, I know personally, if I'm Sean Hill in that situation, I'm talking to the refs, I'm talking to the coaches, I'm getting all that knowledge as quickly as possible. So when that situation arises, you can make, you know, the best decision.
And I think that's partly just his lack of playing time. He started, what, two games before that, and I think he had two kneel downs in Minnesota. I mean, he played overseas, but, you know, just I think that was just his lack of experience in running that goal line offense. I mean,
it's not like you're asking me to go out there and run the 2-minute offense with no experience. This guy's been playing football his whole life at quarterback. He should know just from game sense what to do.
Yeah, I mean, you would think so, but, you know, apparently not. Well, you would think so. I mean, like you said, he played in Europe, you know, true enough. But how many times has Sean Hill actually been in a situation like he was in Monday night? Like, I'm saying this. I think that, you know, as far as Mike Marks go, yeah, he had a brain fart. No, there's no doubt about that. But I still think that just shows Monday night the inexperience of Mike Singletary being in a situation like that. And I continue to say this, Bill. I know why they're not. They had Marks not be the head coach, and they made Singletary the coach. But the fact remains, Singletary is the coach. And in those situations, and once again, I'll bring up the situation earlier in the game where Marks wanted to go for it on fourth down. Singletary overruled him. And they kicked the field goal. I think that was in the third quarter, wasn't it?
Yeah, but another thing, too, if you watch the replay, when the pass is complete, down to the two, March is yelling Spike and they're running people out there. Singletary takes his headset off and walks away from March for a moment and then turns back around.
You know, just a brain fart all the way around, it seems like. You know, and hopefully the Niners learn from this, and hopefully Singletary will learn from this. So if he's in that situation ever again, you know, he'll manage the clock better. The thing for a head coach to do in that situation, like I said, he's not in total control of that situation because of the circumstances of it, of the 2-minute offense. But there are certain decisions that have to be made that, if you make them right, puts your team in a position to score. And that's really all the input that you need as a coach, is to be able to do that and put a team in a position to score. And they were in a position to score, but that one play just messed everything up.
I wonder if they weren't expecting them to be in that position, and they just completely just, you said, brain fired. It's just like, okay, we didn't see this coming. Okay, what do we do? Somebody just, you know, a bunch of people running around trying to figure out what to do. And
yeah, 11 guys with a deer in the headlights look. Absolutely.
I think the best line of the night, though, was with 2 minutes and like 9 seconds left to go, when coach's favorite person in the world, Tony Kornheiser, blurts out, "This game is over. It doesn't matter what happens."
He's an idiot. He is an idiot.
Tony Kornheiser.
To be,
why is he? I mean, I can do a friggin' better job on a football broadcast than this guy can. This guy barely knows the sport.
You know, funny enough, you sound like Dina Students, who does the football broadcast up here at Northwood. You sound exactly like him. You got
that,
a voice of radio.
Is that a good thing?
Absolutely.
Is that a
okay. Me and him had some run-ins. He doesn't like me too much, but you know, I mean, he's got the voice of radio. Absolutely.
Well, you know, I'll try to be nicer to you.
Okay, that's a good
deal. While we do have you on the line, though, we wanted to check in with you and talk a little about Northwood football, how you guys have been doing this year, what's coming up for you, things like that.
Well, our season's done. We finished 2-8, so it was a tough go. It was our first year for our head coach, and we had some struggles as a team. So it was a tough season. I've never been through a losing season like this before in my life. It was something hard to deal with.
You're a senior now, right?
Yeah, that was it. That was my last go around. So. But I had a pretty good year. You know, I was punting and kicking off. Well, I kicked off for about game four on. So averaged 41.3 a punt on 44 punts. That's including a negative 9-yard punt too. I dropped a snap at Tiffin and tried to get it away and got rocked pretty good. So
where are you kicking at next year?
I don't know. I actually, before I called into the show, I called the kicker who kicked before me, and I called his agent. And old coach of mine from high school is going to get me in contact with an agent, he knows. So right now everything's just really, really up in the air. The only problem is when it comes to minor leagues and things like that, there's really, you know, all the arena leagues, they don't punt. So, which is what I would probably play at the next level for. So
I always say, I know there's always a team looking for a kicker, and you just happen to be talking to people from one team that everyone's always looking for a kicker.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm really, it's really up in the air. It really is. I'm just kind of take it one day at a time. I know I'm going to try out for the Continental Indoor Football League. There's teams in Flint and Saginaw. So I'm going to give those a go if I have to. And just, you know, I'll definitely, when the summer comes around, I'll see what's going on.
I know the team in Saginaw switched leagues.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
I don't know what team there is. And I really wouldn't count on that Flint team coming back.
Yeah, what I heard, they were really, really just not well run, from what I heard.
Yeah, I can tell you, I had a couple guys from the Admirals play on that team this past year, and it wasn't a good experience for them.
Okay. I'll take that into consideration, absolutely.
I really wouldn't expect them to come back, but you know, hopefully you know, when the time comes for pro days, that you can hook up either at I think the Northwood guys send their guys over to Central Michigan for
we can actually do multiple pro days now, from what I understand. So
yeah, you can.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about that. I don't know if that's an invite type deal or not. I don't know if you know. But
I think all you got to do is have your coach submit your name in.
Okay.
And
I know when it comes to kicking and punting, especially the AD, who was our old head coach, said it's more, you know, stats are okay in film, but it's more, you know, when it comes to kicking and punting, it's like a personal trial basis. They want to see it. So
yeah.
Hopefully, you know, I didn't kick field goals this year, but I'm I fare okay. I kicked a 52-yarder this summer against the Vipers. So.
Well, you definitely have the leg for it.
Yeah, just sometimes I figured out in college, I don't care how far it goes if it doesn't go between the posts. So it turned out to be a problem.
Well, you know, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be doing some scouting, you know, at those pro days this year. So, you know, you keep in contact with me and, you know, I'll see what I can do for you.
Absolutely. I would appreciate that. Yeah, hopefully we'll make it up to Atwood this year. I played there in high school, actually. I was a sophomore.
I'm sorry.
See, now, you know, Lon, there's hundreds of people out there that don't share that opinion. They think that Atwood is like a cathedral or something.
Yeah.
And it actually isn't a bad stadium except for the turf.
Oh, yeah, the great turf field. I do remember that. Yeah, that was fun.
Hundreds of people haven't broken their leg at Atwood, so I got a little bit of animosity towards that place. I'm still not happy with it.
Well, you know, I think you should blame the field. Don't hate on Atwood Stadium itself.
I just
blame the people that rolled up on your leg. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, I mean,
How is the luck coming? I heard about that.
Well, you know. Broke the leg, dislocated the ankle, and broke the ankle. So, you know, they put hardware in, and now just doing physical therapy 3 times a week.
Trying
to get the range
of
motion.
Of fun. Yeah, no, we had a guy against Tiffin, one of our star receivers. He got, like, second offensive play. He went up for a catch between two people, kind of got the wind knocked out of him. So he stood up and dropped right back down to the ground and broke his fibula in two places.
Yeah. It wouldn't be so bad if they, you know, if they replaced the two. It actually wouldn't be a bad place.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was, from what I remember, because I mean that was a long time ago, and I was riding a lot of pine, so didn't really get a chance to play on it. But yeah, from what I remember, the stadium itself was pretty nice, but I remember the turf was just pretty beat up back then. That was 7 years ago, I think.
Yeah, it's just. That stuff will eat you alive. Actually, my physical therapist, he's on the Atwood Restoration Committee. And he was telling me some of the stuff that they wanted to do. You know,
are they going to go with the grass turf on that?
He said right now he wants. I think they're trying to get something done with the locker room. The locker rooms are the greatest place in the world to be. Sometimes, you know, just. So he said they got plans, but it's just a matter of fundraising and getting everything, all the ducks in a row, so to speak.
Hopefully,
hope
you know,
that,
it's a nice game, you know. It would be good for the city, I'm sure.
It definitely would. Well, Chris, we're going to let you go. Thanks for calling
tonight.
And
you
keep in touch with me. My email address is michiganadmirals@yahoo.com. You know, you keep in touch with me, and come next spring, we'll see what we can do, all right?
Absolutely, sir. I appreciate it. Everybody take care.
All right, Chris. All right. Our next item up for discussion. Bill, I know you're upset that that the Browns lost last week. But he did, I'm sure with Brady Quinn throwing for over 300 yards, he managed to get Wood anyway.
Yeah, I was
threw for 239, not 300.
Oh, okay.
I was gonna
for those of you that didn't hear last week, here's what Mr. Snornberg said.
Now he throws a couple of touchdown passes tomorrow or something. Throws for 350 yards. I'm just saying, the tent will be up.
I was going to ask Bill if he had to seek, you know, immediate medical attention after that game. You know, on those commercials, they say if you have one lasting more than 4 hours, you need to go to the hospital.
Yeah, there you go. You didn't need Cialis, did you?
Wow, that's dirty.
Oh, man, that one popped in my head right after the game. I was like, wow. You know, I'll give Brady Quinn credit. He played a good game. He didn't turn the ball over. You know, what more can you ask? He had a good game. I'll give it to him.
Right side.
Bill, I'm going to give you a few seconds to address your man crush.
The Browns cannot tackle. Their defense is putrid. God, they are awful. They are awful. Just saying, the tent will be up. It was so cold that I was not able to put the tent out in the backyard.
Backyard, my butt. Come on now. We know what you're talking about.
I have no idea why you guys turned this into something like that. You should really get your minds out of the gutter. I was talking about setting a tent up in the backyard and having a big old party. And you guys turn it into something like that, which really, it disturbs me and kind of throws me off that you two are thinking like that. I mean.
Hey, you heard the soundbite from last week, you know.
The tent will be up in the back.
The tent will be
up. The tent will be up. Yes, we can.
Yeah, that's probably right up there with that. With yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can, and the tent will be up.
Yes, we can. Say it with me.
Wow.
Say it loud. I'm colored and I'm proud.
Oh, man.
Bill Snornberg pitches a tent, details at 11.
Can I bitch about one thing for just one moment?
Sure.
Okay. I want to bitch at every radio, television station, mall, store, whatever. It is not Christmas season yet. We haven't even carved a turkey. Stop playing Christmas commercials, for God's sake. Good God Almighty. I walked out that mall in town, and there's a freaking Christmas tree up. It hasn't even snowed yet. There should be an amendment. Obama should go to office and be like, Amendment number 317. You can't put a Christmas tree up until you carve a turkey.
Well, you know, you can do executive executive decisions or whatever they call them. I think that should be one of them because it gets earlier every year. I think within 5 years, that the Christmas season and Labor Day is going to kind of like mesh together. Don't forget, Labor Day at 1 o'clock, Santa Claus will be coming to the Genesee Valley Mall.
I just had to bitch about that for a moment. Plus, I wanted to change the subject.
I agree with you.
Now, he throws a couple touchdown passes tomorrow or something, throws for 350 yards. I'm just saying. The tent will be up. In celebration, and you guys look at it like that's disturbing. That is disturbing that.
Wow.
I
didn't know you felt that way about Santa Claus, man. That's disturbing.
Put the tent up in celebration. Rock on.
That is disturbing.
Oh, you know what? And Coach, I had to ask, I know we're going off subject a little bit. I have to ask you this question because I was discussing it earlier with someone near and dear to you. Do you think it's true that in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, that Clint Eastwood, his script was 2 pages long, that was it? because he didn't say anything.
You talking about his lines?
Yes, in the movie, the good, the bad. Do you think that his lines were no more than 2 pages long in the movie?
I think because a lot of the I think a lot of the script was like, you know, Clint squint menacingly. Clint spit, stuff like that.
Okay, I just wanted to throw that out there because that's one of the great.
But you know what? Here's the reason why that is. I think, you know, those were made in. They were made in Italy, and you know, and they were most of the people in the movie were speaking Spanish, not Spanish but Italian.
Yeah.
And they had to dub the movie to release it in the United States. And the least talk, more talking you do, and let the action speak for itself, the better off they were. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and the music was incredible, but.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and Clint Eastwood in the spaghetti westerns. Nothing better.
Yep. I know we just went full Nugget Marie real quick.
The best Western ever made. Bar none.
Sorry, I had to jump off.
No problem.
Real quick.
Let's get back on sports, though.
Yes, that's it.
I would like to get on bended knee at this point to make a plea, and I hope this athlete hears my plea. Please, please, Roy Jones Jr., stop. You are making yourself look like an ass. You were once the best pound-for-pound boxer in the world. You look like a pathetic ass. Please stop.
You know who he's fighting next, don't you?
Whose grandma is he fighting next?
He's going to fight Evander Holyfield next.
Oh,
he got a red. You just can tell. Because they're both idiots that need money.
Why is it, you know, and you guys, both of you guys can chime in on this. Why is it boxers are like the ones that just don't get it when they're over the hill and can't do it anymore? Is it because, and this is just my opinion, boxers need the adulation and the roar of the crowd more than athletes in other sports?
I just think it's they don't know what else to do with themselves. You know, you get those, you know, you get some of the people that retired, you know, after 25, 30 years of a job, and they just kind of, they go loopy. And boxing is like, okay, well, I can go, you know, skip some rope and run and train, and I can get back in the ring, and they don't realize that their skills have deteriorated, and the fighters that were up and coming when they were, you know, when they were in their prime are now the top dogs in, you know, in the ring, and I don't know why, they just don't realize that they just need, George Foreman was a good example, Larry Holmes. You know, I think Ali was the only one, which, I mean, I may be a little off, but I think he's the only one that didn't really fight past his prime. I mean, correct me.
Oh, yes, he did.
Yeah, he did.
Because, I mean, you know, that was,
Ali fought way past his prime.
Okay, well, see, that was him, you know, I was still a little pup, so, you know.
Ali should have stopped, he should have stopped after the second Frazier fight. And definitely should have stopped after the third one, the Thriller in Manila. To watch, you know, somebody that I really idolized coming up, to watch him against Trevor Burbick, against Larry Holmes, how pathetic he looked there. And here's another thing I think plays into that thing with boxers. In every other sport, it's somebody else basically determines when time's up for you. In boxing, not so much so. So a guy, as long as he can make money, and as long as he has that adulation of the majority of the people, he's going to keep going beyond what he probably should. If you're a football player if you're hanging on too long, a team is going to get rid of you. Nobody else is going to pick you up. Same thing with baseball and all the other team sports. I think that's a more of a thing in individual type sports. Don't you agree, Bill?
Well, I think the biggest thing is boxing is the most gladiator sport of all, because you think when you're a boxer, if you're winning a little bit, that you're invincible, that you can beat up anybody. And plus they're throwing so much money at you that you think you are invincible. You think no matter, oh, if this person beat me, oh, I was off or whatever. You are the most invincible. And that's the most invincible sport that you can be in, because you think that if you one-on-one against someone and you think you can beat them up no matter what age you are. Now, mind you, the baddest person I've seen box who doesn't get enough credit is Bernard Hopkins. Bernard Hopkins is 43 years old and still beats the tar out of people. And he gets no credit. But he's coming to the end, too, and I don't know if he'll stop before it's too late. But everyone stays on way too long. Way too long because the lure of the money and the invincibility, because you're a boxer and you think you can beat anybody. You think you can beat up and fight.
You know, the list is long in that area. You know, you brought up Larry Holmes. You brought up some other people. You know, we could bring up Ali. We could bring up Joe Louis. Even people, you know, in today's era, you know, Felix Trinidad, who comes out of retirement and gets the snot beat out of him. You know, Roberto Duran from back in the 70s, who fought, who was one of the greatest fighters, I think, ever.
And Julio Cesar Chavez, same thing.
Yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard retired 17 times. The one person that never came back that knew it was time was Marvin Hagler.
Yep, I was just thinking that.
And you know what? I am of the opinion of with that though, Bill. I don't think that Marvin Hagler retired because he knew it was time and he knew his skills were eroding, blah 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 blah. I think Marvin Hagler got so disillusioned by that Sugar Ray Leonard fight that he just lost the desire.
But that's true, but if he lost his desire, he said, you know what, I lost his desire, I don't feel like doing this no more. He didn't try to come back later, he just was like, I'm done. He's where, in France now, wherever he is, living in some mansion? I'm not trying to say be funny that he's living in a mansion in France, I'm saying that's the last I heard.
Okay.
He was in France.
You know, it's just... I think the individualness and like you said, the gladiator aspect of the sport of boxing is what gets these guys going much too long. And let's face it, the sport of boxing now is in pretty much disarray from heavyweight on down, especially the heavyweights. Name me three heavyweights.
I can name you the Klitschko brothers.
Yep.
And
that's
James
too easy.
Tony.
That counts one.
James Toney, Chris Byrd.
Chris, come on. That's another example.
I'm just saying.
And I know. And
I'm just
I know.
Saying,
and
you
I
said
know.
Maybe,
being,
you said
and
a
I know maybe, being
you
in Flint,
said
Michigan.
Three head weight.
I know.
You
I understand. I know. Saying this in Flint, Michigan, where Chris Byrd was born and raised, is. I'm going to smoke a turd in hell for saying this, but Chris Byrd was the most overrated boxer.
I didn't say he wasn't overrated. I just said you said the name three. Those are the first three that popped into my head. And the only reason why I say James Toney should have
quit by
was
now,
was
too. After he got his ass kicked that last time, he should have left.
There's Haseem Rockman. There's...
I mean,
really
these are bums. This is why the heavyweight division right now is so effed up. You got guys that, I mean, Rockman was back in the Mike Tyson era. You got bums, you got old bums fighting, young nobodies fighting, and nobody's taking charge of the heavyweight division. You got two plotting ass Russians as heavyweight champions.
who will never fight each other because they're brothers. They're brothers and they're not colored. Give us a high five.
You did not just sing the Wayans Brothers song. Wow.
Boy, we definitely got to take the movies away from him, don't we?
Oh, no more BET for you, sir.
That's TV One, dog.
Oh, they moved it over. Then.
Isn't it the same thing?
Give me a high five.
You know, and actually, you know, with the heavyweight division, I don't think there's really been a big name heavyweight since Tyson,
since Rocky Balboa.
Yeah, Rocky Balboa.
I love boxing, and it is so disappointing now. One, it pisses me off that the good fights are on pay-per-view when really boxing's missing the boat on all this. They could have it on an ABC or ESPN, and people would watch. People are tired of paying $40. The Nimrods that go out and bought the Roy Jones fight all should have to go sit at Ford Field and watch the Lions play for 3 weeks. Because if they're that stupid to pay $40.
Sit on the sharp stick.
And you know what? Probably most of them are Lions fans who are stupid enough to buy that crap for $40.
You know, I think that was a big part of the downfall for boxing is pay-per-view era because people got really sick of, you know, paying $30 for a Mike Tyson fight that lasted a minute and a half. You know, you run to the kid, you know, you run to the bathroom, come back to fight though. It's just like,
the boxing rivalries are not there. You know, there was pay per view, or they called it closed circuit then. Way back in the day, when you would go to a movie theater and watch a fight on closed circuit. You know, it's basically the same thing as pay-per-view. Now, you pay the money and go in the theater, and you sit down and eat your popcorn, drink your pop, and watch the fight. But I think what really is missing is the rivalries in boxing. That's why boxing is not the draw it used to be. I haven't really cared for boxing, you know, since the Mike Tyson era. There either has to be rivalries in boxing where there's something that compels you to watch these two guys fight two, three, four times, or it has to be one guy like Mike Tyson was that was such a dominant personality in the sport that he transcended the sport. And there's nobody in any division right now, in my opinion, that meets either one of those categories.
Well, it's hard to sell a middleweight where all your good middleweights are over 35 years old, and some of them don't even fight anymore. I mean, the really good guys that fight are the lightweights and the middleweights, and people are not going to really go, oh my God, over the Oscar De La Hoyas, Bernard Hopkins, Mickey Wards of the world. They're just not going to do it anymore. And the best fights that they want, you have Don Cain or someone else who's managing them who will never let the best fights happen.
Right.
And that's the big problem is the two best fighters, pound for pound, right now will never fight because they're managed by two different people. And that's the big problem.
That is a very big problem. You know, stuff like that did not happen in the olden days of boxing. I mean, let's take a look at the eras, okay? You know, you talk about Mike Tyson. There was, until Mike Tyson got beat, and really afterwards, there was no guy to say, man, I sure wish Mike Tyson would fight so-and-so. Mike Tyson was that dominant personality that carried the sport by himself. In the early 60s, Muhammad Ali carried boxing by his sheer force of personality by himself. Now, when he got to the 70s and he got older, and then came the trilogy with Frazier, the fights with Ken Norton, you know, those rivalries, as the fighters became older, became the it became a persona of the sport. You know, in the 50s with LaMotta and Sugar Ray Robinson, people would pay to see these guys fight 2, 3, 4 times because the talent level was that close where it was such a compelling thing that you would pay to see these guys fight because you weren't sure that Sugar Ray Robinson was going to win all 4 fights or Jake LaMotta was going to win all 4 fights or whether it was going to be 2-2 or whatever, you know. And the same thing with Ali and Frazier. You weren't really sure who was going to come out on top of those fights. If you're going to have like a Mike Tyson type of individual, his personality and what he brings to the sport, his sheer ferocity in the ring in his early career is what drew the people in.
All right, and that's I think the reason why a lot of people the lower divisions people don't get into them because they're not as violent. You know, you see a heavyweight fight, you want to see 2 big old bruisers just beating the snot out of each other. And it seems like the lower weight classes are more, you know, more strategy, more, you know, just trying to outpunch the other. Not so much knock the guy out, but just land more punches, whether they're knockout punches or what, you know, just stick your jabs, you know, work the body and just try to win judges' decisions. And the heavyweight class, you just... You know, that's why people like Mike Tyson, because he would just go out there and just brutalize people.
Let's move on from boxing and go to, college football right now. And I want to ask the big question, and I want to get you guys' opinion, and I want to be the first to chime in. Who's really number one? And I am going to say at this point, Texas Tech is my number one. Just for what they've done the last 2 weeks. Alabama has beaten Arkansas State, you know, who's basically little sisters of the poor. And then they beat a fading LSU in overtime. Texas Tech has beaten Texas, which was number one at the time. And they beat Oklahoma State, which was number 8 at the time. There is no way in my mind that Texas Tech is not at this point the number one football team in the country.
I agree. Everybody knows how we all feel about the whole BCS system. The fact that you've got, you know, undefeated teams that are behind even some 2 lost teams, just that blows my mind. I mean, I don't understand it. I mean, they strength of schedule, all that crap, whatever. You know, let the teams play. And Alabama, I'm not an Alabama fan, never have been. And I think the SEC has a few more weaker teams than the Big 12 does. So I'd agree with the Texas Tech being number one. I was shocked that they weren't, huh?
I want to see a team try to stop that offense because after wasting 1 hour and 45 minutes of my Saturday night, I flipped over to the Texas Tech game, and just they're a freaking machine. And I want to see a team try to stop them because I dare somebody to try to cover Crabtree 1-on-1 because you can't do it, and you can't blitz them. You better hope the 4 guys you're rushing get to them because Graham Harrell will pick you apart. They scored at will on Oklahoma State Saturday. And you have to have a ton of speed on defense to hang with them. And just like we said last year with the Patriots, you can't go down the field and try to settle for a field goal with Texas Tech. You have to score touchdowns.
Yep.
I mean, we'll know what happens. They have to play at Oklahoma. If they get by Oklahoma, then they're going to play in the Big 12 championship.
You know, and talking about the BCS, this is my personal opinion also. I think they're looking for a way to sneak Texas or Florida or Oklahoma or USC into that national championship picture. And I think you're going to see if Texas Tech wins out and Alabama wins out, those two teams should be the logical choices to be in the national championship game. But there's going to be some BCSer is going to try to sneak one of those four teams, probably Texas, into that national championship picture. This is why I firmly believe you got to settle this on the field. You have to. And where does this leave the non-BCS teams? Boise State. Where does this leave Utah?
Ball State.
And I never thought I'd be saying this in a million years, but where does this leave a team like Ball State?
played in the Motor City Bowl against Wisconsin.
About it.
At least you have to, at least in my opinion, you have to at least give these teams the opportunity to win or lose on the football field. If you have a tournament and the Ball State loses, is put in that tournament and loses the first game, nobody has a damn thing to say behind that, because the game was won or lost on the field, not on a damn computer.
I don't understand why it's so easy for all the people who are on the radio to come up with a playoff, whether it be 8 teams, 4 teams, or 16 teams, and you could still involve the Bulls. You have 16 teams start playing December 8th. You get it down to 4 or whatever, or 8. Then those teams play in the Rose Sugar Orange and Fiesta Bowl. And then the winners
You don't even have to incorporate these six. Say you got 16 teams, okay? You don't even have to incorporate these 16 teams in the bowl system. There are 34.
There are 34 bowls.
That is 68 teams.
Right.
And we're
I'm
only
telling
talking
you,
about
if they
16 out of them.
And I'm saying, you take the four you involve the four major bowls. So that's where the final eight are played. You use those four bowls for that, and then you have a final two the following week. You could be done by January 8th before the NFL gets into their big playoffs. You could be done, and the thing they look at is, because these athletic directors and presidents are stupid, how much money all these schools who have home games, how much money they're going to make from it.
And I heard one stupid comment by some athletic director. Says, well, it'll be in December. Our attendance will suffer. Are you serious? Are you friggin' serious?
I can tell you right now how idiotic Michigan and Notre Dame fans are when they win or lose. But I can guarantee you 306% those Nimrods for both schools will drive 15 hours if both of those teams are playing a playoff December 15th. And
look,
it's 12 degrees in South Bend and 10 degrees in Ann Arbor. There'll be 110,000 in Ann Arbor, and there'll be 80,000 in South Bend, guaranteed. I can guarantee that.
But I have a question for both you guys. You have, say you end up, you know, you do your playoffs, you have two undefeated teams in this playoff, you determine who has home field, who gets the higher seed.
Then the championship game should be on neutral ground.
I mean, I'm talking even just the playoffs, because you say you take Ball State
better the team with the better record has the home field advantage.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, what if they're both undefeated?
I mean, you go through a similar formula to the NFL use.
Well, you know what? Sometimes you see it in the NCAA tournament. There may be a team that is 26-3, but maybe playing a 23-8 team from a bigger conference. It just happens that way. Sorry.
Right. So
you know, who cares? And you're not going to give Ball State a home game before a Michigan, Notre Dame, Wisconsin, Oklahoma, Texas, Florida, USC, even a North Carolina. You're not going to do it just because of stadium size. You're not going to do it.
So would it be a better idea to have it, say, you know, like the basketball tournament set up to where you have, you know, you have regions?
No, I firmly believe that's what, just like in the professionals, that's what you play the season for, to go as close as you can to undefeated, and if you're going to have a playoff system, to get home field advantage.
I guess I just look at it like, you know, like say you take, like I said, say Ball State, and they go undefeated in the MAC, and you got, say, Texas Tech.
Ball State is not going to, I'm going to tell you something, Lon. Ball State is not going to complain take a hypothetical situation. You know, Ball State goes 12-0, and then their first game in the playoffs, they're playing, like USC, who may be, 10-2. They are not going to complain about going out to Los Angeles, first of all, because you can make more money from the cut from the game in the Coliseum than you can make having the game in Muncie, Indiana.
Oh, I agree. I guess I was just wondering, what you guys thought about as far as, you know, how they would set up the, as far as home field advantage. You know, like you said, 10-2 USC and 12-0 Ball State. You know, USC gets the home game because, you know, there's more money involved. But, you know, it's just so many different just angles and stupidity. And you know what? This Central Michigan game is turning into a new fog bowl. I don't know if you guys are watching it or not.
I'm actually not.
Yeah, if you the press box view, the high view, yeah, you can. It's getting hard to see the field.
They were talking about that
what,
before
Bill,
the game,
Bill,
that
Bill
it's an anniversary is a fog bowl, so that's kind of funny.
But you bring up a good point line. This is probably where you could probably keep those rankings and the computer that you do with the BCS and all that. That's where you could continue to keep that into play, because that then it'll take into account strength of schedule and things like that to compile the 16 teams to be in this playoff.
Right.
You're not. Just for strength of schedule, you're not going to have a 12-0 Ball State team be ranked higher than a 10-2, 9-2 USC team, you know, hypothetically.
Oh no, I agree with that. But like I said, they say strength of schedule, and you know, I'm assured that most people think that the level of competition or the level of athletic talent is better in the Pac-10 than it is in, say, the MAC. So, you know, they're going to say, well, we play harder teams, but we went undefeated, and just seems like that'd be a big just clash of, you know, who should host the home game, because they're not playing, theoretically not playing the same level of talent. It's like with the NFL, everybody should be on about the same level. You know, everybody's pro status and everything, but you have your smaller colleges, like I said, say a Ball State or a Boise State that doesn't necessarily play the caliber of teams that, say, Alabama plays. So who's strictly
and that's why, yeah. in NCAA basketball, they take that into account.
Right. Right. That's why I was wondering, you know, with the regions, you know, to put it, you know, say, a so-called neutral site. I mean, it's not really a neutral site when, you know, North Carolina ends up playing in the Raleigh or in the North Carolina regional, but, you know.
But, you know, in basketball, you're playing two or three games in a weekend,
yeah,
too.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, that takes that into account also.
Oh, yeah.
Moving on here, Bill's guy, Charlie Cheeseburger, got the dreaded vote of confidence today. I know you know that, Bill.
He didn't get a vote of confidence. He was asked a dumb question by a dumb reporter.
You can say it however you want to, Billy.
Whatever. I think that all these nimrods that are calling for a man's job when he's recovering the school from a death penalty are over-anxious nimrods.
What death penalty? Now, you are over-dramatizing this whole thing.
They had no players, and they had no depth and no players from recruiting. He had to retool that whole roster. Just like you're watching your boy down at Michigan do the same thing now, he's having the same problem. He has to do the same thing.
So what's your excuse for the BC game?
They played like total dog crap. If he does not do anything next year, he will be gone.
Boy, and you know what line, if he has a man crush on Brady Quinn, he at least has a boy crush on Charlie Weiss.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's awful premature to be called for a man's job. I mean, it's premature to call for a man's job when he had to retool the whole roster when things were so bleak roster-wise. And I'm telling you people the same thing I was saying a year before. The same thing is going to be at Michigan because they're going to call for his head next year and go, it's his second year. He has no players on the roster.
But the thing about it is the average fan does not understand it. All they see is win and loss.
I know, because I'm telling you the two stupidest fans in the country when it comes to football are Notre Dame fans and Michigan fans. They're the two most stupid, unrealistic fans in the country.
Well,
and I can tell you that neither one of you will disagree with me.
Well, I can think of some stupider fans, but than both of
there are stupider fans. I mean, they're unrealistic fans. Like, Michigan State football fans are the most unrealistic Nimrods because they beat Michigan and go, oh, my God, we're the greatest football team ever when you haven't run crap in 20 years. Freaking Northwestern has gone to more Rose Bowls in 20 years than you guys have.
I also hear that Charlie Cheeseburger is going to be calling plays, I guess starting this week.
The offensive coordinator, Mike Haywood, his cousin died Friday, so he will be gone. And so it was planned on all along on Friday over the weekend that he was going to do it this week anyways because Mike Haywood was going to be gone attending the funeral.
Don't you think that, that they were leaning toward that anyway? I think
it was in the works.
I think that Charlie Weiss called himself, he's going to make himself out to be a hero running to the rescue because he looks at the schedule and he sees Navy and Syracuse coming up and he can really kick their ass and make himself look like a genius.
I wouldn't call him anything that with Navy because Navy can run the ball all over them if they want to Saturday.
I mean, you think the Navy's got a chance?
Yes. Yes, I do. They should win Saturday, but I think Navy has a chance to win Saturday. Yeah. They let nobody's run for like 150 yards on them. Yeah, I think Navy has a chance Saturday.
Last thing about college football. And then we're going to go through our NFL pick 'em for this week. Is the Heisman race over?
If Graham Harrell wins, if Texas Tech wins against Oklahoma, the race is over.
I think that's about accurate.
You don't think Crabtree's in that mix too?
It's the guy throwing the ball this year. It's
always the guy throwing the ball. Come on.
Yep. It's Harrell's. It's Harrell's too. That man was 40 of 50. That man was 40 of 50 last week. That's sick.
Yeah.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. I know he's another one of your favorites, Bill. Is he? Good or is he Brady Quinn good?
He better than Brady Quinn.
Is he good or is he good?
He's all right. Just saying, the tent will be up.
The Kent will be up in Lubbock for the rest of the season for Bill. I do think Harold, it's for him to lose, I think. I really do. He's having such a fantastic season. And he's going to be a heck of a quarterback at the other level because he has such a command. He has such a command of the game. I mean, they've thrown everything at him but the kitchen sink, and he's been able to handle every bit of it, you know?
Well, you got to be careful, too, because he spends a lot of time with the shotgun, though. When you get to the next level,
you know
those guys are a lot faster.
He can adapt, I think. You know, they talk about the progress that Colt Brennan has made with the Redskins. I mean, he doesn't have to play right away, but he's made good progress of being a drop back passer. You know, more in line with what the Redskins would want. So, you know, I think he's going to do well at the next level. I think. Before we get to our NFL pick'em, I have to bring up what I think is the best name in football. Ben Jarvis Green Ellis.
All 16 of his names.
Best name in football. This is a guy who was on the practice roster at the beginning of the season. He's like 13th string running back for the New England Patriots, and now he's the guy that's toting the mail. I'd like to talk to his parents and see how they came up with the name Ben Jarvis. Maybe mama didn't know who was the daddy, and one of them's name was Ben, the other name was Jarvis. They just decided to mesh it together.
She should have went on the Maury show. He could have found out for her.
What you call it? He does that stuff now. The angry white guy.
Steve Wilkos.
Oh yeah, Steve. Yeah.
Maury's better though, because Maury you can bring the women on who's been on there. This is so and so. This is her 15th time on the show trying to find her baby's father.
I'm sure this time Roscoe is the father of my 8 children. Roscoe is not the father.
Does the run off
roll
the stage and
the
tuck
floor.
And the tuck and roll on the couch. The run of shame down the hallway on the couch, tuck and roll.
Come back. How we get on Maury? Come on. Man, we our attention span isn't good today. Let's get to the NFL pick'em for this week. First of all, tomorrow night's game, the New York Jets at New England. Oh, first, before I get to those picks, I should say I'm looking for the ones from last week. Lion, you were 3-2 last week.
Yes, sir. I called the Giants. I called the Giants.
Yes, you did. Yes, you were the only one to call the Giants. I would like to say I was the only one to call the Indy, though.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I was also
3-2.
That was another prime example of terrible clock management at the end of a game.
Indeed. Mr. Snornberg, on the other hand, did not have a good week. He was 1-4. The only game he picked right was the Monday night game.
Denver. Yeah, the Minnesota game. No?
Yeah. No, he picked Arizona.
We had to pick Arizona.
He went with Cleveland, so, you know, we know how that goes. But anyway, back to the pick'em. Jets in New England.
I got to go Jets.
William?
I'm going to go with the Patriots.
I'm going to go with the Patriots, too, and I'm going to tell you why. I think that the Jets are winning this year, not because of Brett Favre, but in spite of him. He's gone back, from what I've seen, to the Brett Favre of a couple, 3 years ago that's throwing balls up for grabs. And I don't know whether it's part of the, you know, that he's still – last year. And I think New England's going to put pressure on him, and he's going to throw some balls up for grabs and give the Patriots short fields on tomorrow night. So I'm going to pick the Patriots, too.
I don't know. I think
next one, and there's such good games this week, I chose six games instead of five this week. Next game is Baltimore at the New York Giants.
Yeesh.
This game probably is going to be 5-3.
That's
5-3 Giants.
Wow.
I'm going to take the upset, and I'm going to take the Baltimore Ravens.
What about you, Lon?
Yeesh. That was that was difficult. You got two of the best defenses in the game. I got to go Giants because I think if they start getting after Joe Flacco, then I think he's going to make some mistakes.
The next game is a game that I am picking as my upset special of the week. All right.
You didn't pick the Baltimore game. You didn't pick the Baltimore game.
Yeah, I did. I said the Giants.
Oh, did you? Oh,
yeah, Giants 5-3.
Oh.
This is my upset special. Remember, you heard it here first. The Jacksonville Jaguars will beat the Tennessee Titans.
I was going to pick Jacksonville anyways.
I can't do it. I got to go with Tennessee.
You are not a brave man, Lon Turner.
Well, I'm a realist.
Till they lose, right?
They get after David Garrard, it's going to be trouble.
Next one is San Diego at Pittsburgh.
I'm going to take Pittsburgh, and I'm going to tell you why. The San Diego Chargers have traveled 15 million miles this year to play football. 15 million miles. And now they have to go back to Pittsburgh. They got to go back on the East Coast.
The schedule maker did not do them any favors, that's for sure. I mean, they went to England. They went to Buffalo. Now they're back. They went to Miami. The schedule makers did not do them any favors this year. That is for sure. But I'm going to pick San Diego.
Really?
Yes.
I think of Pittsburgh. That's kind of iffy because Ben Roethlisberger been kind of suspect the last few weeks. You know, he's hurting, and I think he may just need to sit out, just let Byron Leftwich come in and just. And so he can heal up and get to the playoffs. The Ravens going, he's not going to make it out of the season. But I got to go with Pittsburgh. Another good defense against San Diego. San Diego is they're horrible this year.
Don't you think the networks are hoping that Palomalo and Tomlinson collide at about the 40-yard line and go out of bounds?
And you know what's funny?
We predicted that in a commercial.
But you know the funny thing about it is that. That commercial, that song that's playing it is actually a song from The Good and the Bad and the Ugly, which y'all were talking about earlier. See? I know stuff.
Good old Hugo Montenegro. He was the man. Next game is Dallas at Washington. Much anticipated game. Tony Romo makes his return. T.O. should be all smiles again, but is that going to help the floundering Cowboy offense?
I think the Cowboys have a lot more problems than just Tony Romo being hurt, to be honest. I mean, I got to go with Washington. Nobody really knows how well Tony Romo, how good his finger healed up. Nobody knows until we actually see him game speed. So I got to go with Washington.
I have no idea why I'm doing this. I'm going to take the Cowboys. I have no idea why, so don't ask.
Concussion syndrome, I think.
I don't know.
Hail to the Redskins. That's my pick. And I think it's going to be easy. Last game, Cleveland at Buffalo Monday night game.
If Washington wins and wins handily over Dallas, then Jerry Jones might as well just do it now and get rid of Wade Phillips, the most overrated head coach in pro football.
Wade Phillips is not coaching that team. Come on.
Well, I know, but he's a head coach. You might as well just get rid of him and get it over with. He's just an older version of Lane Kiffin, except 50 pounds heavier and a lot dumber looking.
Last game, Cleveland at Buffalo.
One.
I'm taking the Buffalo Bills.
I gotta go. You know what? I'm gonna go Cleveland, just because I think Monday night kind of does something to them. I mean, you know, you saw what they did in New York on Monday night.
I think the Browns are in disarray right now. And not even Bill's man crush is going to be able to lift him from the bowels of lethargy.
Well, if Jamal Lewis, who never talks, calls everybody out and they still play terrible, then they're in the world. Then Romeo Crennel has lost that team if he hasn't already.
So your pick?
I'm not even saying nothing no more. I've been made fun of too much tonight.
Well, we know what that means, folks. We know what that means.
Just saying, the tent will be up.
Last thing before we leave tonight, Al Davis, in his infinite wisdom, has taken the offensive coordinator's play calling powers away from him. I don't know whether he took his ring or took his headset or what, but something's got to be done with Al Davis. Al Davis must be stopped before he destroys the Oakland Raiders.
If he hasn't already.
Please, everyone, write your congressman. Write your senators, write your city councilmen, even drop a line to the president-elect if you feel it would help. Governor Schwarzenegger, it doesn't matter. This man must be stopped.
So you're saying Al Davis is the new public enemy number one?
Yes. Yes, he is. Call the FBI.
He done moved
up. Call the FBI.
So he's up above Bin Laden now?
Yes. Yes. They look the same. I think he looks like Bin Laden's daddy or something. I don't know, I'm sure.
I think the only reason why he's number one is we know where Al Davis is. We just have no clue where Bin Laden is.
That's true.
They know where.
Hey, we're going to get ready to take off tonight. Don't forget our new show on the Michigan Regional Sports Network, Cup Check, with our buddy Ray Clark tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Michigan Regional Sports Network. And before I take off and sign off for tonight, I want to wish both of my grandchildren happy birthday. My youngest grandson, Gabriel, will be 1 year old tomorrow. And the older one, Benton, BJ, will be 2 years old on Saturday. So we're going to go down there and have some cake and ice cream with them, and we'll be back early next week. Lon and Bill, thanks for calling tonight, and we'll check you guys out next week.
All righty.
All right. Everybody, thanks for listening tonight, and we'll see you next week on The Locker Room here on the Michigan Regional Sports Network. Good night, everybody.